Aria Brzezinski, and we are here today with a very, very special guest who is president of the Pennsylvania Teachers Association, and his name is Patsy Tallarico. And did I say that correctly?
Absolutely.
Okay. And he is going to talk with us about education in Pennsylvania and the teachers, and of course, this is the Teachers Union, the PSEA. What I'd like to do first is to have Patsy talk a little bit about himself and tell us how he got to this position and where he comes from.
Thank you. My name is Patsy Tallarico. I'm president of the Pennsylvania State Education Association. I taught elementary and middle school math for 26 years, and I have been on release since I have been an officer in the PSEA, started as treasurer, and was vice president, and am in my starting my second year as president of PSEA. I am married and have two children, one of them a computer network engineer, and the other finishing his third year of law at Duquesne University. I taught in New Kensington Arnold School District, which is about 25 miles northeast of Pittsburgh. And we now are living in Hershey while I'm working full-time in Harrisburg.
Now, there has been so much this year with regard to education and the things that the Secretary of Education has done and things of that nature, good or bad. What I'd like to start off with is something that happened this spring, and that is the passing of the Empowerment Act. Having perused it a little bit, empowerment was not exactly what I gleaned from what I read. Would you explain to us what the Empowerment Act is and what it entails for our listening audience who may have read something about it in the newspaper but really don't understand?
Sure. And we feel exactly the same way as you mentioned here. We feel that the only person that is empowered by this act is the Secretary of Education. We have certain methods that are tried and true to try to bring up student achievement, not silver bullet. Everything that comes down the pike is going to make everything better types of theories. For example, we've always said that we smaller class size, especially in K through 3, not only helps the children in K through 3, but they carry that on with them as they go on into the middle elementary and the middle school and high school. So what we see here is the taking away the rights of the local people, taking away the rights of the local school board, and it's sort of, if you look at it, on one side they're always talking about local control, this administration, but everything that they do pulls that local control away from the locality that we're talking about. And just let me say, in these districts that have been so designated as educational empowerment districts, these teachers and these students in those districts work beyond what they need to do in order to try to make the education a success for those children in those districts. They have been labeled inappropriately, we believe, and it just puts a dark cloud over everything that they're trying to achieve. Because if you take a look at these districts, they all have common threads. Poverty. They have a high incidence of transiency throughout the district. The children and the families move to other districts. They move throughout the district to other schools in that district. And it's a shame that rather than trying to do something that was positive, that this had to be done in this way. And once again, let me, say it was done without any input from the experts in this area, which are the teachers.
Now, there are 11 school districts that I understand from that have been designated as these at-risk school districts. And what I'm amazed at, and what you have reiterated here, is the fact that these school districts have high poverty, the rate of students moving, but also that there's a very high divorce rate among these various school districts, and there's a high crime rate. as well. So these are all factors that have absolutely nothing to do with, and I'm sure if we looked at teen pregnancies and drug problems and things like that, we'd find the same kinds of things. These are all problems the teachers have absolutely no. Now, I'm thinking about Philadelphia, for example. There are 100 languages in the Philadelphia School District, 12,000 teachers, 200,000 students. And because of the universities, there's a high incidence of people from other countries, other cultures, and we have all these expectations. I mean, the expectation is that somehow the teacher is going to magically wave a magic wand and change the ineptitude or the inequality that exists. And also, I'm told that there's a high number of teachers who are not certified in that school. I mean, there are a number of teachers who are not certified. So we're making students and everyone responsible for cultural and society kinds of things. Can you address that?
Absolutely. You know, we are very concerned, and we've been an advocate of early childhood education, making sure that the children get into a Head Start program, making sure that we try to get full-day kindergarten throughout the districts, in all the districts in Pennsylvania. Once we do this, I mean, there's data, there are statistics that show that these children do better. And you're absolutely right. You know, whenever a child gets up in the morning and there's nobody there to send them off to school, when they get home in the evening and there's nobody home to greet them, you know, coming to school hungry, coming to school not knowing if there's going to be anybody home when you get home, a child, probably the last thing on their mind is to try to learn. These are the things that we have to try to instill in these children, and you can't do it unless you have the programs that are going to create an atmosphere where that child wants to come to school. Mentoring, after school, coming to school at an age whenever reading and being there so that they can discuss what the educational aspects are. This is what we need. These are not being addressed in the so-called Education Empowerment Act. And, you know, once again, we have a plan that we know will work because it has been tried, it has been tested, and the statistics are there that tells everybody that it does work.
There's also seems to be an inequality of funding in these districts. It seems that the more wealthier the district, the better the opportunities for students. Now, I don't know if that equates to less divorce and things of that nature. I'm not quite sure. I really haven't read the statistics in the various school districts, but it would seem to me that something also needs to be done about the inequality of the funding. I mean, if we're really talking about wanting better education for children, then we really need to get a better, or is there a funding formula for these impoverished school districts?
Well, with the act came some extra money to try to do some things that should be done. It was too little, also the plan was deficient also. But if you do take a look at the funding that the school districts receive, one of the biggest problems is the school districts throughout Pennsylvania receive the same amount of money for their special needs students. And if you take a look at the empowered school districts, their special needs students are higher in number than a lot of the districts throughout the state. So what happens is, by law, they have to take care of those special needs students, and they should be taken care of because nobody should be left behind in public education. But what happens is they have to dip into their regular school budget in order to make up the deficiency in the special needs area. And what happens then? They have to raise taxes. The taxes are the property taxes. So you have a community where made up mostly of retirees in a lot of these districts, and their taxes are going up. They have a right to complain, but they're aiming it at the wrong people. It's usually aimed at the teachers. And with a $500 million budget in this state, it's a shame that any district has to have classes where the roofs leak, where there's no technology. And an interesting statistic is, in Pennsylvania, in order to bring every building in the state up to par, talking about infrastructure and technology, it would take $10 billion, with a B, billion dollars. So, it's a shame that because of where a child is born, that's going to determine what kind of an education they get, what kind of technology they have available to them. Because let's face it, they all have to, when they get out of school, compete. They have to be able to become productive citizens of the community that they live, productive residents of the state. And if they don't come out of there with the means in which to go out and do these things in order to support a family and become productive, then the state's not doing their duty.
Well, you made me think of the Daniel Boone School in North Philadelphia that has 2,500 students who are the special needs, at-risk, incarcerated, whatever you want to call them, students. And here they are in North Philadelphia, one of the most impoverished areas, and we're asking the school to pay for 25. I mean, most school districts don't have 2,500 students, and we're asking for a poor neighborhood to pay for the education of those at-risk students. So, I mean, the inequality is just unbelievable. And the other thing is the difference between a political timeline and the education timeline. And I noticed that, you know, in the Empowerment Act, there was a political timeline, which anyone who's an educator knows is literally impossible to turn around an entire school district. Would you speak to that?
Absolutely. You know, 2 or 3 years is not enough time to do that. You're absolutely right. But the other item with this Empowerment Act is, you know, this whole administration is going to be gone before, while this is still in effect. And, you know, here we are as educators. Every time a new administration comes in, there's a new plan. Everybody has the panacea for curing all the ills of everything in education. And what we really get frustrated with is, if it hasn't been for the education chairs on both sides of the aisle, the Republicans and the Democrats, there would be a lot of things that would be going on in education that would be make this a lot worse than it really is. And I do have to say that working with the Republican and Democratic chairs of the Education Committee and Republicans and Democrats throughout the House and the Senate, we have been able to do a lot of things that either change some of the bills that have been trying to be put out there or trying to get them put somewhere where they won't see the light of day. It is very frustrating.
You are listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here every week, and we are always with exciting guests. We are here today with the president of the PSEA, the Teachers Union in Pennsylvania, Patsy Tallarico. And we're talking at this juncture at the about the Empowerment Act in Pennsylvania, which the governor just recently passed in the spring on the 11 at-risk school districts that don't seem to be doing too well. And one of the items in that Empowerment Act is a test called the PSSA. Can you tell us what that means and what the test is all about? And are we determining an entire school district on the basis, the value and the credibility and the way students learn on one test?
This is another of our really large problems we have with this act. First of all, the PSSA was never intended to do what they're using it for in this act. It was never intended to determine whether or not a school district was achieving or not achieving. For example, if they really wanted to measure whether a child is making progress or not, they would test the child in September. They would test them with the same test again in June, May or June, whenever the year is over, to see what kind of improvement they made. With the PSSA, it takes how many students are in each quadrant. So conceivably, with this test, some districts may never get out.
What does that mean? How many students are in a quadrant?
Well, how many, for example, they say 50 below 50% of the students that do not pass it. But if you look at that, in order to get back up to grade level, some students may never do that. But if you have a child that's in seventh grade and they tested fifth grade at the beginning of the year and they improved to a sixth grade level, they're still not up to grade level, but they've made improvement. So what you do is you do some mentoring with that child. You have a summer program for that child in order to bring them up more and more. This is just something that we feel is there because, and the secretary denies this, that the state doesn't want to take over the school districts. But what it is doing is it's going to end up making it possible for non-certified teachers to be hired. It's going to take away the ability of the local school board, and it's going to have the state come in and be able to reconstitute, which means replacing teachers, replacing principals, without having due process. So this is why we are adamantly opposed to this, and hopefully we have filed a lawsuit, and it has been joined by the Federation also. And those are the things that we are saying. It's unconstitutional. The decision made by the State Department of Education just are not the powers that they have in order to do this. So we want to bring the level of education up for all of our students, but we don't think this is the way to do it.
Now, you brought several points. It's possible for non-certified teachers. It reconstitutes the teachers and principals so that they can be replaced. What was the second point you made? I'm sorry.
Well, they could do all of this without due process. In other words, they could come in and make wholesale changes without having anyone go through due process.
How is it possible? I think what, and again, we have a listening audience here that's parents and community people who aren't educators necessarily. What does PSSA stand for? Okay, and what does it test? I know it's Pennsylvania State something or other test. And what does it test for? Because I don't think most of us really understand what this is and what it I know that what you've said now is it does not measure when a child, for example, gets tested in September and again in June. It doesn't show whether or not they've improved. It just shows that they're not on grade level. But what, I mean, where did this come from, this test?
Well, it's a test that has been used for quite a while. And, in order to... And it's done, I believe, in math, English, science, and social studies. But the only portion that they are using for this is the math and the English, I believe. And it shows where the children rank, and it puts them in quartiles. But it was never intended to be used for the purpose that they're using it for here. And this is one of the reasons why we think that, this is not the right way to go about this.
Now, does it rank children in the state of Pennsylvania, in the United States? Does it compare one district to another? This is what people don't understand. When we talk about using tests, each test measures and compares different things, and one test may measure something else, and, it doesn't necessarily make it. Sometimes we're measuring apples and oranges and grapes, and most parents don't understand when they see in the newspaper, when test results come in the newspaper, what they are looking at exactly, and this is what I wanted to educate them on. What are they looking at? What are they being compared to?
Well, it would compare students in the different districts, but nationally, there's what is called a NAEP test, NAEP. Most of the states participate in that. Pennsylvania does not, so that is what would be used to compare nationally, to compare scores. And we used to participate in that. We do not any longer, and we believe that probably would be a better measure of what the students are achieving. So, if the tests would be used for what they were supposed to be used for, then things would be a lot better. But we're getting so much into this high risk testing anymore. There's testing for everything, and a lot of these things just put more pressure on the students. There are tests that aren't made up by the people that are doing the actual teaching in the classroom, and a lot of it it's just a high risk. A lot of people are making a lot of money on it.
You said two things. It was never intended to. It was never intended for this purpose, and I wanted to know what was it intended for. And secondly, how is the scoring done? Because that's another factor that most parents don't understand. Is there somebody on a computer that's checking off? Is there some individual? Now, from what I understand, this test is handwritten. There are parts of it that are handwritten. If it is, then that means that there's some human being somewhere out in the Netherlands that's testing this, who has no knowledge of the student whatsoever, and is using some set of circumstances and criteria to judge. And again, we're talking about poverty children who don't compare with the rest of the world. So my two questions are, what was the test initially for? And secondly, how is the scoring done?
Well, you're absolutely right. It is not done by the personnel that are doing the teaching of the child. So the person doing this has no idea of the personality of the child that they're checking. And I believe that this was done initially as an assessment of where the child stood as far as grade level, etc. Once again, it was not something that was supposed to be used so that you take the test this year, you take it the next time you're supposed to take it, and you have to achieve that grade level in order to get out. Because as I said before, that could conceivably be where a lot of these districts, the children will never, ever be able to get out of the situation that they're in.
Well, this is my personal bias against testing as well coming out. So that's why I seem to be grilling you so much on it. But I just feel that, and this seems to be the only measure by which the Empowerment Act is measuring the kids who are either going to be successful schools or not successful. This is the only measurement tool. And we know from both Gardner's work, Howard Gardner, and Carl Prebrum on how the brain works, that a test does not measure all the various kinds of intelligence that a child has.
Absolutely. This is the point I was trying to make before. There's too much emphasis that is put on these high-stakes tests. I mean, when they're used as a tool in order to go in and find out where the problem is so that you can make a diagnosis. And once you make that diagnosis, then you can do a prescription to fill in where the weaknesses are and to work on the strengths. But in order to do that, you have to use a tool that's going to be diagnostic so that you can get the information from that.
And most of the time, these tools are not diagnostic. So getting off on the Empowerment Act. So now there's one more part of that I wanted to talk to you about, and that is that for those school districts who are listening who are part of the Empowerment Act, there's an empowerment team. There is... what some of the newspapers around the state have done is to state that the Secretary of Education is now taking over the schools, and have petrified many of the parents who are in our listening audience. So please tell us in English, and not in the words that are used in the technical terms that are used in these acts, tell us in English exactly what the process is going to be here. Is somebody going to review them and the testing, and how does that happen? And, is it 5 years down the road that we have before the state takes over? And, of course, the Secretary of Education isn't here anymore, or the governor. How does that work?
Well, the teams have already been named. The Secretary of Education has named the teams that will be working in the districts. We have also notified the administration, the superintendents, the school boards of those districts, offering our help also. We want to see these school districts achieve. We want to see them succeed. And we feel that if we can be a part of that process, as we said before, by setting up some of the ideas that we know work, it's going to give a better chance for those districts to be successful. And once again, at the end of that time period, if it's deemed necessary, then the Secretary of Education can come in. As we said before, they have wide sweeping powers. They can reconstitute. They can do all of the items that I mentioned before, and that local would be powerless.
Well, it seems to me that those in the hierarchy at the Department of Education, especially, who have never stepped foot in perhaps Philadelphia school district, would have a very difficult time understanding the needs and the problems of the day-to-day. I mean, I actually encourage my listening audience all the time to go into the classroom. Absolutely. And to see, you know, it's easy to judge. And I've spoken with, for example, the president of the Einstein Schools across the United States, who, Mr. Whittle, who said, you know, I never realized what I was getting into. We all poke fun at the districts and the public schools, and when you get in there, you realize that, you know, there's so much more going on, and those of us who stand on the outside really have no concept or no clue what's happening on the inside. Teachers are virtually, people don't understand this, teachers are virtually powerless in their own classrooms. We train them to be professionals, and then we make them do everything that legislators and school boards and superintendents require of them, and we don't give them the opportunity to be the experts that we train them to be. And yet, we expect them to do the kinds of things and have the kinds of things. Now, I wonder how many people on their job, if their boss stood constantly over their shoulder day after day after day and told them every little thing that they were supposed to be doing, I wonder how they would function in their jobs. And we don't think about that in terms of the teaching profession. Do you have any comments about that?
Well, you know, it's not only that, but, you know, how would the lawyers group or the doctors group, how would they feel about somebody coming in that was neither a doctor or a lawyer dictating to them what they had to do in their profession? We are a profession. We studied hard. We've trained hard. We've gone to school, and we have the experience. To have someone come in to tell us what we should be doing without having any input from the experts, which we are, no other profession does this happen to.
And this is most, most true. We have allowed textbook companies. We have allowed these knee-jerk responses to something new coming down the pike. And I was just thinking about in Philadelphia, they've got this Texas group coming in that has a 2-year track record to come in and deal with their at-risk students. I mean, everything that comes down the pike, everybody knee-jerks in response to. And as you said earlier, whatever new administration we have is what the new... Now, if I were in a job and every year the focus of my job changed, and I spent an inordinate amount of energy getting people together to get everybody on track, all of my team on track, to wherever direction they're going, the next year I changed to something else. As from a business perspective, that's an entire waste of time and energy. And yet, we constantly expect teachers to do this. And what people don't understand is if they were in a teacher's position, they would feel, and the first question I get everywhere I go around the state, not, of course, with the teachers, but with everyone else, is how much money teachers make, how incredible their salaries are. But what most people don't understand is what's that in comparison to?
Well, you know, there are figures from recent studies that show if you compared a teacher's starting salary to a starting salary of a comparable person with a master's degree going into business or into technology, at starting salary, it's between $8,000 and $10,000 difference. But if you go to where a person has been teaching for 15 to 20 years and compare that to someone that's in business or industry, it's a $20,000 to $30,000 difference. Now, you know, a lot of teachers, well, most teachers, get into teaching because they feel, you know, that this is what they want to do. This is where they really belong. But let's face it, what's happened now is education in Pennsylvania is about a $9 billion effort, and there's a lot of money to be made. So now you're having private companies that are coming in that want to get a piece of the action. You have people that want to privatize because they feel that this is going to make education better in Pennsylvania. But whenever you do these kinds of things, you make different rules. You know, some people say it levels the playing field.
You are listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski, and we're going to take a little bit of time out for our sponsors. Please join us for our second half hour. You may call us at any time at toll-free 877-PRO-KIDS, that's 877-PROKIDS, or email us at ProKIDS, PROKIDS, at rlc.net. That's ProKIDS at rlc.net. Join us again for our second half hour with Patsy Tallarico, the president of the PSEA.